This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lewis Shiner's latest novel is a blend of historical fiction, romance, and crime, and it revolves around the tango. The story involves a guy named Rob Cavanaugh, a recent transplant to Buenos Aires. He falls in love on the dance floor, but his relationship exposes him to Argentina's dark history. Thousands of citizens disappeared in the country's dirty war, and Rob's new crush is somehow involved. Lewis Shiner drew upon his personal romance with tango and a love for Argentina when he wrote his new novel. It's called Dark Tangos. Going to be reading from it at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham tomorrow at 7, followed by a live tango performance. But first, Lewis Shiner is in our studio. Again, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be here, as always.
Tell us briefly about this novel. It's a kind of an adventure and also, again, got some of Argentina's dark recent history.
Well, it's a lot of things. I have a little problem with genres. People want me to stick to one genre or another, and I tend to flit about even within a single novel. So, as you said earlier, there's elements of romance here. There's a whodunit, kind of. There's some heavy political stuff. And there's a crime element and suspense and all manner of things.
How did it get started in your head?
The thing that started it, first of all, my girlfriend was the one who first suggested that we take some tango classes, which we did locally in the kind of thriving tango community we have here. And then we were looking for some place to go on vacation, and she suggested Buenos Aires, since that was the home of the tango. And once we got down there, we made some friends. We had a good time. We went back several years in a row. The thing that was really the impetus for the book, we happened to be out walking the streets of Buenos Aires. It started raining. We ducked into an art gallery. They were having a showing of photographs that were related to the dirty war of the 70s, which, of course, I'd heard quite a bit about. But there were elements that I didn't know about that came out in this in the photographs. The main one of which was the fact that a number of the people who were involved in the torture and kidnapping actually kidnapped newborn babies from some of their victims and took them home themselves or gave them to other families in the administration to raise. And as soon as I saw that, I said, wow, this is big. So that combined with just the desire to write about tango.
Yeah, and it's such a complicated history when you have a story, and I'm talking about Argentina's history now in the dirty war, where identities become confused, where you want to forget your past. People have a hard time even confronting their own history and are confused about their past because they're not sure who in this case, paternity is an important question, right? Rob
right.
falls in love with a woman who thinks she has one father, and they're on both sides of this dirty war, and they both, you know, in some ways committed atrocities, although her real father is a little cleaner than adopted dad. But give us a little bit of the backstory to the extent that you want to not give it all away.
Of the novel?
Yeah.
Right. I don't want to talk too much about it, but yeah, Rob is a computer programmer. He's lost his job here in the Triangle. They basically told him his job had moved as if of its own volition down to Buenos Aires.
It had moved.
Where it was much cheaper to pay him. So he took the relocation while he's down there. He had been several times because he was working with a team in Buenos Aires. And he had taken up the tango while he was down there and pursued it again here in the Triangle. Once he was down there permanently, he happened to meet a woman under kind of strange circumstances, ran into her again on the dance floor, and became involved with her and, again, drawn into her past and her relationship with her father, which was very complicated.
Will you read for us?
Yeah. What I'm going to read is... the tango dances are called milongas, and you have these at nightclubs, basically in Buenos Aires. Small dance floors, crowded people, there's a lot of formality surrounding the tango. I think we're going to talk about that maybe in a little bit. But the scene right here, this is where Rob has just run into her again, or has just seen her again in this milonga, and has managed to get her attention and is about to start dancing with her. Elena was not a flawless dancer. She missed at least one fairly clear lead. She led herself into a couple of risky voleos and even ended up on the wrong foot once. As for me, I still struggled with those moments when my brain went white and I couldn't think of anything to lead, and I still got flustered when the couples around me stopped moving for too long. None of that made any difference. She knew every note of the music, and when we sped up with it, there was a catch in her breath like mounting passion urging me on. When Pavarita spiraled up to its silences, it left us wrapped tight in our embrace, our breathing suspended. It was the feeling that made me want to learn tango in the first place, that I was no longer an isolated, solitary creature, but half of something greater and more graceful. In tango, when you're in sync with the entire floor, moving and breathing and pausing together, there is no longer any distinction between your body and the music, and the very concept of loneliness ceases to exist.
Lewis Shiner, reading from his newest novel, Dark Tangos, talked about the complexity and the formality of tango. And it strikes me that when you talk about a place like Argentina, where people try to forget because they have family members, they themselves have been on both sides. They've been victims and they've been offenders, and it just gets too hard. And it strikes me that the tango is the perfect dance to set up as the metaphor for how people engage something that's nearly impossible.
Yeah, it's there's a couple of things there. The Argentinians have a kind of reputation in the rest of Latin America. This is something a friend of mine told me when we were in Mexico last year. He said that they call them mochos, which has an implication of someone who's very distant and kind of cold. And when you look at tango, you can see a sort of coldness there in that it is so regimented and regulated. When you go to a milonga, they put the men on one side, they put the women on another, they put the couples on a third corner of the dance floor. There's these very rigid rules by which you invite someone to the dance. The man must make eye contact with the woman and give a little nod of the head called a cabeceo, which is the invitation. The woman either responds with a smile or looks away. And there's tango colors, there's a certain dress code that's expected at the milongas. So all of this is formal. And yet, at the very same time that this is going on, the tango, the way it's danced down there, is almost entirely in close embrace. So you are going up to a strange woman, putting your arms around her, holding her tightly, and dancing a very passionate dance to very passionate music. And then you step away, and it's over.
Yeah, this intimacy, resistance, formality, coldness, coolness, and the ultimate kind of passionate dance, the tango.
And yet there's the detachment from it because it lasts 3 minutes and then you step away.
And then you have to step away. Did that strike you? I mean, was that important for you going into this book, this kind of
metaphor? I have to
say
that I think I learned more about tango in the process of writing the book than I knew going into it. I came to understand, I think, a lot more of the sadness and joy that blend in the dance. The tango lyrics tend to be very depressing. It's all about betrayal and abandonment and deceit and all these terrible things. And it's always the woman's fault, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you know, the music is lyrical and passionate and you dance to it. So on the one hand, you have this sadness and loss and despair. And on the other hand, you're making beauty out of it. And I think that's the real essence of tango.
And, of course, the tango is a lot older than the Dirty War, but the two seem to be a kind of a match, particularly in the aftermath, again, coping with these complicated memories. How much research did you do on the Dirty War itself?
I did a fair amount. I speak some Spanish and can read okay, and I struggled through several books. Struggled is not necessarily the word. Some of them were quite interesting. There was one I think you would love if it was available in English, which is a series of interviews with people who are actually participants in the history. And it starts in 1955 and goes through the end of the Dirty War. And they talk to not just reporters but actually politicians and people who are making the actual history and doing these interviews and string them into a narrative. It's really great stuff. So that was part of what I did. Part of it was talking to people. And, you know, you talked about the kind of coldness and distance that's associated with that. There is a real reticence in Buenos Aires to talk about this part of the past. And I remember going into a bookstore and asking for some books about it. And the bookstore clerk seemed really embarrassed that I'd even asked him about it.
So you did some research, and it gets kind of gritty in here, too. I mean, there are all of the aspects of that dirty war, including torture, that you had to write about. How did you research that? How did you get the feel?
Well, there's a book called Nunca Más that was a report of the Human Rights Commission that was started in 1983 as soon as the junta was taken out of power and democracy was restored. And they interviewed a lot of the victims. And there's considerable discussion in there of there's a lot of people who recount what happened to them. It's interesting and kind of sad in a way that so many of the people who are describing what happened to them can't talk about their feelings. They can only talk about very objectively, my body was placed here, these things were done to it. And there's almost nothing in there of what it felt like or how, you know, how damaged they were by it.
I hadn't thought about that, but that is a fascinating problem for a writer who has to write about torture from inside the body of the victim, knowing that in a sense that's the one thing, the one eyewitness account you can't quite get. I have detached myself from that psychologically.
Right. And so it was just an act of empathy at that point to say, how would I feel if this were being done to me? And when you can get very explicit about the things that were done and understand the principle behind it, if principle's the right word, the CIA was instrumental in helping the Argentinians do the torture. There was a CIA manual that was used for it, and I read that manual. And it's interesting. It's the physical aspect is only one part of it. The real goal of the torture is to reduce someone to infancy, essentially, and then bring them back with you as a parental figure. And so the idea is, you know, when people talk about torture, they sort of concentrate on the pain and the physical aspects of it. But really the long-term damage that's done is that these people are destroyed. Their personalities are wiped out.
So you're completely remade. Yeah, School of the Americas is the training. It's still open. It's still going on.
Yeah.
Same training manual. We are still doing that, the United States of America.
Yeah. Yes. Very sad.
Still doing that. Very sad indeed. And
well, that's one of the reasons that I think that the parts of the book that deal with torture are extremely painful and uncomfortable for the readers. And the reason that I did that and would not let up is just what you said, the fact that we are still doing this. And there are people who are excusing it, and I don't think – well, I hope that after you read the sections that I wrote about torture here that people will not be able to feel that it's justified.
Well, it's one of the more interesting, you know, what you just said is fascinating because the experts will tell you you don't get very much good information. You get a lot of information. None of it's any good, or some of it might
some
be,
and some
isn't.
Not. You don't know which.
Being able to sort that out is obviously the problem. But it really is about remaking people, particularly high-profile people, if you can turn them around and they suddenly become a propaganda tool. But it's about restructuring a human being and not about getting intelligence or preventing an attack or any of that. It's about reshaping a human mind.
Well, theoretically, once you have destroyed this person's personality, they will tell you everything they know. But the sad truth is they'll tell you what they think you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what a child will do. Children are absolutely programmed to tell you what you want to hear.
Yep.
They're brilliant at that. You talk a little bit about the Perones, Juan and Eva Perón, who are – the people of Argentina have mixed feelings about them. They were at one time certainly the heroes of the Argentinian
people. Yeah, it's very interesting that the devotion of the Argentine people to Juan Perón was amazing. They had to outlaw the party that he had created for many years. 1955, I mentioned, was the starting point for the interviews in that book. 1955 is the year that Perón was ousted and went into exile for 18 years. And they had to outlaw the Peronist party for the entire length of time that he was gone because of this devotion of what they call the descamisados, the shirtless ones, who are the poor people who were devoted to him. And yet, at the same time, and yet seems to be a recurring theme in today's show, and yet there was a certain fascist quality to Perón's rule. He idolized Mussolini. He learned a lot of his governing techniques in Italy from Mussolini. He was part of the military, and there was a very strong military presence there. And yet, at the same time, he kept the big corporations out. And once he was deposed, and particularly during the era of the Dirty War, Argentina opened its gates to the rest of the world and to big corporations who came in and gradually displaced Argentine business.
When you did your research, you talked about some of the resistance going in Argentina itself. Do you get the feeling there was a but yet in their resistance, that people are really happy to see this? One way or another, they would like to see this story told, and yet they don't want to be the ones to tell it?
I don't know. I think that certainly some of the people that we hung out with, who tended to be a little more leftist oriented, one of our tango teachers down there was kind of a classic leftist figure that you would see in Latin America, would very much like to have all this stuff told. But I think a lot of people would just like to get it over with, just to move on with their lives. There was a law passed right after the dictatorship fell. It was called La Ley de Punto Final, which was loosely translated as the period at the end of the sentence, the full stop law. And the whole purpose of this law was to try and put everything aside so that people could move on. But the problem with that was they didn't resolve anything.
You seem to like historical fiction. You certainly have written a lovely novel that was centered right here in good old Durham, and then you traveled to Argentina. Is writing historical fiction, with those two books, essentially the same? Do you take the same approach, or did you find something fundamentally different about this book?
I'd say that the process is similar. It's a process of immersion. You try and just find whatever you can that will give you the human insight, that's not just the broad 20,000-foot view, but can take you into the hearts and minds of the people who were there at the time.
Do you find when you travel around with this book, or even in talking with publishers, that the fact is that Americans don't know much about that history?
They know
something
don't.
Went on around.
No, they don't. And that's one of the things that I'm doing to help promote the book. Instead of going out on a physical tour, I'm doing a blog tour. And I've got essays actually this week coming up at several high-traffic blogs. Two of them deal with the history to cover that, and some of them are on tango and so forth. But one of them particularly is focused on the history of the Dirty War.
And what kind of response have you gotten so far? Because I'm sure
so far it's been great.
Yeah.
People are really excited about it. And this is kind of a coming thing, because the age of the physical book tour is kind of behind us. It's too expensive.
Right.
And this virtual tour is actually a good deal.
But in terms of people's knowledge or thirst for knowledge, I mean, it gets a little confusing down there. Let's see, was that Pinochet? Oh, no, that was Chile. And Perón, that is Argentina. And
right.
So it's, you get into that kind of confusion. You find that your audience at least is willing to dig in, or is everybody saying, well, that's too far away?
Well, I do have a great audience, of course. So, yeah, I think my audience is interested in those kinds of things, kind of by definition, or they wouldn't be reading my books.
It's great stuff. You've done it again. Thanks so much, Lewis.
Thank you.
Lewis Shiner, author of a number of novels, including Black and White and Say Goodbye, the latest, Dark Tangos. Going to be reading at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham tomorrow night at 7, followed by a live tango performance. You can't beat that. For more information, go to lewisshiner.com. Just ahead, we talk about the 20th anniversary of the film Daughters of the Dust. Stay tuned.